Hello once again and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Shartok. In a 5-4 decision announced shortly after 10 a.m. this morning, the U.S. Supreme Court announced they had voted to uphold the majority of the Affordable Care Act, derided by its detractors as Obamacare, including the section requiring all Americans to have health insurance or face monetary penalties. The decision means the historic overhaul will continue to take effect over the next several years, affecting the way countless Americans receive and pay for their personal medical care. It could also be seen as an election year win for the president, who was recently neck and neck with GOP contender Mitt Romney in the polls from key states. Joining me in the studio today to help digest this decision is Albany Law Professor Vince Bonventri, a former clerk for two justices of the New York Court of Appeals. He also held a U.S. Supreme Court Judicial Fellowship before joining Albany Law in 1990. Professor Bonventri, welcome to the Vox Pop.
Hey, it's a treat to be here, Alan. It really is.
Well, we're delighted you're here.
Thanks.
Everybody, these phones are going to be ringing off the hook right now. Is your best chance, because none of them are ringing. 1-800-348-2551. Again, 1-800-348-2551. Vince, if I may call you that, let's talk for a moment about the decision. The wires are reporting, for the most part, it was approved. But it seems to me that with the exception of some of the Medicaid, it really was a total win for the president.
Absolutely. It was a total win for the president. And I think what really is even more interesting, and you and I were talking about this before the show, this was a brilliant move on the part of the Chief Justice.
Yeah,
I mean, what did he do? Absolutely brilliant. He joined the libs, so he looks good. He's not going to look like a partisan in front of the American people anymore. And those of us who study the court, we can no longer say, oh, he's 100% a partisan. He absolutely always votes with the conservatives, with the Republicans. A brilliant move.
I think you're absolutely right. I've been saying it today. And the brilliance is that it restores to some degree the reputation of the court.
Right.
I mean, I've been thinking of them as a bunch of five thugs sitting up there doing Republican bidding.
I thought I was bad calling them partisan hacks.
Yeah. But for whatever reason, you know, I was fascinated last week because I saw President Obama say very confidently, this thing is going to be upheld.
Yes.
Now, as I always say to my students, it's not what you know, it's what you don't know in this business. I kept thinking, does he have an inside track here?
Yeah, but you know, Alan, I mean, there are a few things you could be very confident about. You could be very confident that the four libs, right?
Sure.
Ginsburg, Breyer, Kagan, Sotomayor, were going to go along with Obamacare. They like it, and they also had the case law in their favor.
Yeah.
And you were absolutely sure that at least three of the conservatives, right? Thomas, Scalia, Alito, they were going to vote against it. The only question marks were Kennedy, the swing vote, and Roberts was a question mark because, as we've been saying, his court would have looked awful. It would have confirmed everything those of us who have been criticizing the court have been saying.
Right, you are. Professor, when you were at the court, can you give us a little bit of the flavor of how these decisions come about?
Well, the court, what happens is, I mean, they have oral arguments, right? So they have the attorneys come and they argue the case. But what must be said is that the justices, by and large, already have their minds made up because they know these cases so well.
Sure.
Their clerks, remember, they've each got four clerks. The chief has got five. The clerks pore over the briefs. The justices, the ones that are good and do their homework, they do the same thing. They discuss these. So they know the issues extremely well. So by the time they get on the bench, they by and large know how they're going to vote. Something may happen in oral arguments, but as many of the justices have already said, 90% of the time they already know which way they're going to go. Then after that, they conference. They conference the cases they've heard at oral arguments. There's not that much back and forth at oral arguments. In fact, under Rehnquist, there was none. He didn't want any. Everybody said how they were going to vote and why, and that was the end of it. Roberts allows a little more. After that, the opinions are circulated. If you've got the majority, you're writing the majority opinion. If you disagree, you write a dissenting opinion. The opinions get circulated. Somebody says, hey, you know, why don't you change a sentence here or there and I'll join you. That's the way it goes.
But the Chief Justice assigns who writes. And in this case, he assigns
himself. If he's in the majority.
Yes. If he's in the minority, the senior justice assigns. Is that right?
Well, if the chief is in the dissent,
yes,
he assigns. Wherever the chief is, he assigns.
He assigns, right.
The senior in the dissent will assign.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, we got a lot of people on the phone, Professor. Let's go to Julie in Albany. Okay, Julie, you're on.
I just wondered if you knew where I could go for more information about the current Obama provisions for health care, such as will it have any effect on whether children's hearing aids are covered under HMOs?
You know, I don't know. Probably at some websites. You know, if you look at some of the websites, the Democratic Party websites, the Obama websites, they tell you a lot of what they think is very good about the Health Care Act.
The other thing is, Julie, you might want to go to, if you're interested in something as specific as that, you might want to go to the association. There's always an association here in Albany for the hearing impaired or the rest, and you could call them up. I think that would be a good way to find out.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thanks, Julie. 1-800-348-2551. Ron in Pownall, Vermont. Ron in Pownall, you're on.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Chief Justice Roberts is just a simple snake in the grass. I won't mix words.
Wow.
He made the opinion that he wrote just to help scuttle Obama's election. If you look, or, you know, you heard what he said in writing his agreement with, you know, he's saying just the law is, we don't care whether the law is good or bad, we just check the constitutionality of it.
Right.
And the thing is the 2000, he's looking back at the 2010 elections where the Republicans got swept in because of all the rhetoric about the Health Care Reform Act. And this is it. If Obama was really smart, he'd implement everything right tomorrow.
Well, he can't.
You know,
the law says 2014 for most of it. But okay, Ron, let's go to the professor now. Go ahead.
I think that the Chief Justice probably has a lot more to worry about when he thinks about the reputation of his own court and his own reputation. That court looks so bad to so many people that study the court. Court watchers on the left and the right think it's a terrible court. I mean, Alan called them a bunch of thugs. I said they were partisan hacks. But whether you're on the left or the right, if you look the way the court has been voting on guns, gays, God, campaign finance, immigration, they always split the Republicans on one side, the Democrats on the other side. You don't have to be a genius to know what's going on. I think he was very, very concerned about his own court. And therefore, I think that's primarily the reason why he went the other way and joined the libs.
Me too. And one other thing, Vince, if I may, and that is that most people will never even look at Vince came in with a
it's 193 pages.
most people won't even look at it. So that while you're right theoretically that he wasn't too nice in the way he wrote the opinion.
No, not at all. In fact, one of the reasons why the networks were so confused at the outset is that when Roberts was announcing the opinion, first he lambasted the president's assertion that the federal government had this power under the Commerce Clause, which is why some of the commentators thought that the court was
going
to throw it out. Yeah. And then at the end, he pulled this Alfred Hitchcock, but under the taxing power.
Yes, it wasn't Commerce, it was tax. Hey, Ron, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Doctor.
Right. Okay, let's go to Rod in Chicopee. Okay, Rod, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon, sir. Two things. One was, I realize that the healthcare system in this country does need to be fixed and that this was a valiant attempt. However, in spite of all of the politics involved, I'm very wary of the way we're going to ever really pay for this, sir. How are we going to pay for this kind of a system? It's already said $5 trillion in debt, according to what they say, but, you know, those estimates could change tomorrow. The other issue is that if this is a tax, which is what the courts are saying now, is it not a tax that is inevitable? Like, for example, the death tax. It's probably the only tax I can think of that we have to pay that there's no other out. I mean, if I don't want income tax, I don't have to have income.
Okay, Rod, I guess
property and so forth.
Okay, only because we have so many people behind you. Let's throw that to Professor von Rentry.
Oh yeah, thanks.
Well, okay.
You know, I think what you have to consider is that this independent mandate requiring everybody to have health insurance was actually a conservative Republican idea.
Yes, we know who's
now. The conservative Republicans are not that interested in spending an awful lot of money, paying the government a lot of money. The reason why they came up with this is because they figured there were a lot of freeloaders who were getting health care because they didn't have any insurance, and then they'd rush to the emergency room. That was costing everybody a fortune. So let's make them pay for their own health insurance. That was a way of actually saving money for everybody else. Of course, as soon as the Democrats picked it up, the Republicans suddenly didn't like it. But there's lots of studies out there which say that the health care costs are increasing so greatly that this actually is going to save some money. Who knows? I don't know. But I do know that the conservative Republicans thought this was a way to save money.
And $2 billion a week for wars. You know,
that's
we're
right.
not talking about you saving money there. Hey, Rod, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
All right. 1-800-348-2551.
We'll take a break. We'll be right back.
Support for Vox Pop comes from Dam Cafe and Deli, Saugerties, New York. Serving breakfast and lunch with chef-created soups, salads, vegetarian options, and homemade desserts. Catering services available at thedamcafeandeli.com. PS21, Performance Spaces for the 21st Century, Chatham, New York. Presenting Simone Shaheen on oud and Dafir Tawil on percussion. Performing crossover Arabic Western music Saturday, June 30th, 7:30 p.m. PS21chatham.org. The Franklin D. Roosevelt Presidential Library, presenting the Roosevelts, Public Figures, Private Lives, a new photographic exhibit daily. HistoricHydePark.org. David Stein and Charles Padula, DDS, Union Avenue, Schenectady. Cosmetic dentistry, including Invisalign, where teeth can be orthodontically moved without braces. DavidSteinDDS.com. And SUNY IT, offering online graduate degree programs, including an MBA in technology management. Graduate.sunyit.edu for more information.
And we are back with Professor Vince von Rentry of the Albany Law School, and as you can hear, a man who has got not only a lot of sense but a sense of humor.
Thank you,
Vince. Let's go back and take the phone calls. Every phone has been ringing off the hook. I want you to know that. And so let's go to Jeffrey in Beckett, Massachusetts, where everybody dances. Okay, Jeffrey, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. I'll be quick. Look, I want to disagree with you guys. Roberts might have been concerned about the public perception of the court, but if he had based his decision on that level, then it would have been a cheap political decision. I really want to believe that he believes each case should be debated and decided on how it relates to the Constitution. If he had made a decision based on his concern for perception, he would have violated his own conscience on an issue that is obviously to everyone is of paramount importance. And really, in the sense, Alan, that you were talking about how there being five thugs on the court, I think there's probably nine. But the problem is to us that there's just five conservative thugs, and I think we'd like to see seven.
I'll take the amendment. Five conservative thugs.
I don't think anybody can be objective about a constitution that wasn't written objectively.
But you know, Jeffrey, just from my perspective, anybody can rationalize anything they do. And do. I mean, if you say to a guy, to any one of them, are you a thug? And you put a lie detector on and say, are you a thug? No, straight line. but you always have a way of rationalizing what you do and believing it. And I think that's the case. You know, we know what they should be. The question is, what's the difference between should and is? In other words, what's the reality of the way that they are? You can tell me anything you want about Clarence Thomas. I can tell you, I think the guy, is not a brain. I don't think he thinks a lot.
I absolutely agree. Yeah. And it's all political, whether it's liberal or conservative.
But I loved your comment. I think it's well worth putting into the mix, and I thank you for making it.
I think we should also add here, though, that the questions that come before the United States Supreme Court are not clear. It's not as though you could just go to a provision in the Constitution and get the answer. You could read the Constitution day and night for 100 days, and you will never get the answer that to the question that was before the court. What you can do is you can look at some precedents, and overwhelmingly the precedents in the Commerce Clause area would have supported Obamacare. One of the interesting things, however, is that Chief Justice Roberts clerked for Chief Justice Rehnquist. Mm. And Chief Justice Rehnquist was the author of three opinions saying that the federal government is going too far under its Commerce Clause power. So he was actually being quite faithful to his mentor, Chief Justice Rehnquist. On the other hand, with regard to the taxing power of the court, it's another provision of the Constitution that's not very well defined. So it's not as though what he's saying is illegitimate at all. It's that he probably could have gone either way on the tax and spending provision. And there was this other factor in there that, oh, it might also help the court's reputation. I don't blame him for that at all.
Okay.
I guess we'll never know. Thank you, Jeffrey.
No, we might. Thanks, Jeffrey.
Appreciate it.
1-800-348-2551. That opens up one free line. Let's go to Brooks. It says in Rochelle. Okay. Brooks, where are you calling from?
Rock Hill.
Rock Hill. Oh, Rock Hill. Okay. All right. Go ahead.
So I had a question with respect to the Medicaid portion of the law where the government cannot pass on unfunded mandates.
Right.
And I was wondering what, on a go-forward basis, if what freedom of maneuver does the administration have? They said they couldn't completely cut states out of the Medicaid program for not participating.
No, they said they couldn't punish. They said they couldn't punish them.
Could they reduce their funding instead of cutting it entirely?
They can't.
So, in other words, have a carrot and stick approach.
Well, the court said that the court could withhold the new funding that the states would have gotten, but that's it.
Okay, so they don't have.
So they can't go back and say, "Well, you're not getting any funding."
Okay, or even say you're getting half of the funding you used to get.
You know, Brooks raised an interesting issue here. The initial thing that I heard coming over the wires this morning, I don't know whether it has any substance or not, is that states that didn't want to participate didn't have to in this. That's not the case, right? I mean,
I think they're required to participate. If they don't participate, they just don't get the extra funding. Now, this is 193 pages, Alan. I didn't memorize the whole darn thing.
Keep reading. Keep reading and report in tomorrow morning. Let's go to Bill. Go ahead, Bill. You're on.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
I got a comment and a question.
All right.
Comment is that I don't know why you're surprised that Roberts went the way he did. He's always been on the side of the president of presidential powers.
Of the opposite party? I mean, if you heard...
I think when Bush appointed him, it wasn't the party, because there are Republicans that don't necessarily agree with Bush and Roberts' opinion on the powers of the president. I think Roberts felt he had to be consistent, yes.
Well, that's a possibility, certainly. But on the other hand, if you heard what the political scientists like my guest call the obiter dicta, you know, the extra stuff that comes out in the court, you heard a pretty angry guy about Obama today in Roberts. And I think he was looking over his shoulder at his colleagues.
Yes, and you know, the Citizens United decision a couple of years ago where the court threw out the restrictions on campaign spending, Roberts was well aware that Obama thought that decision was a disaster. And yet in two subsequent decisions, two decisions since then that nobody's talking about, the Supreme Court with Roberts has thrown out Arizona's campaign finance restrictions law and Montana's campaign restrictions law, which Chief Justice Roberts knows the Obama administration would favor.
Excuse me, I did not mean to imply that he was deferential to the person in the office of the president.
Right.
I meant to imply that where presidential powers were in question was where he would come down.
Well, Bill, I'm glad you called. Thank you for doing it.
Can I ask my question?
Yeah, just sure.
Quick. All right. Real quick, I'd like the professor to comment on the thought that by upholding the mandate, that is basically this is giving taxation powers to corporations.
Well, in the sense that this act requires individuals to purchase private health insurance?
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I think that's giving taxing power to the corporations.
Well, I mean, indirectly, I gather your point is valid that this is going to make money for the corporations, for the health insurance companies.
Well, not only that, but it's going to put them somewhat in control. You no longer have a choice of whether to do business with them or not.
Hey, if I had my way, the insurance companies would not have anything to do with health care in America.
I agree with you on that, Alan.
But the fact of the matter is, it is, as they say in... And when you talk about your relatives, one step removed. you know, it's one step removed. It is true they're going to be making out, as Vince says, as a result of this. But they don't come around and put you in jail.
Insurance companies are always going to make out.
Yeah.
I think it's more than just they're making out. People have to, you know, people in business have to make money, but they don't have to do it by being compulsorily in my pocket.
Okay, buddy. Thank you for calling.
Okay.
Yes,
bye.
Bye. Let's go to Maxine in Monroe. Maxine in Monroe.
Hi.
There you go. Hi.
I have to sort of laugh. When Romney did the health care plan in Massachusetts.
Yep.
He was all for it. Now, when Obama's health care plan looks very, very much like Romney's plan, then he's against it. And my question would be, would you really want to vote for someone who perceives himself as making such a debacle of health care in the state that he was governor in?
Okay, I'm going first, and then Vince. But here's what I think. I think he didn't help himself today.
No.
In other words, he looks mealy-mouthed. I think you're right. Can you imagine he sits down with his advisors, Maxine, and they're sitting around a table and say, well, you know, Mitt, you got a little problem here. You invented, you invented this thing, and now you got to go after him with everything you've got. And people will say, well, how could he? Well, he did. And they figure out something. Well, it was the state. It wasn't the feds, whatever else. And you make it up as you go along. But, you know, you're going to lose the election unless you do something. And I think that this was the best he could do today. But he really looked bad. Really looked like he was sort of desperate to me.
Yeah, and the Republican primaries, Mitt Romney had to say he was against this.
Oh, yeah,
all right?
Right?
Because, you know, it's the... it's the really rabid Republicans, like it's the rabid Democrats, who show up and vote in these primaries. So, you know, the core of his party.
Not everyone, but a lot of them are rabid.
Yeah. So, you know, the core of his party does not like, they don't like Obama, right? If Bush, it was Bush care, they might have liked it a little bit more. But they don't like Obama. They don't like Obamacare. So he had to come out against it. The additional problem for him today, added to the fact that he was for it, now he's against it, is that to most of the public, this looks like the United States Supreme Court has put its stamp of approval on it.
Yeah.
It will look like Chief Justice Roberts, the conservative Chief Justice, has put his stamp of approval. See, unlike Alan, most people are not going to be reading the 193-page opinion. So all they're going to hear
Alan.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So they're going to think the Supreme Court has put its imprimatur on this thing. It's just not good for Mitt Romney today.
Well, also, you know, like when they talk about, you know, naming the penalty if you don't have health care insurance personally, or that you're, if you have a job that your employer doesn't provide it for you, or, you know, you still, even if your employer provides you with the opportunity of paying in, you know, of paying a premium into whatever health care plan that they've chosen, the idea, you know, this penalty, it's a penalty. It's not a tax. You know,
it's the only way
for not doing what you're supposed to be
Maxine,
doing.
No, Maxine, the only way he could get where he needed to go was to call it a tax.
Right.
Well, you know, actually, the Chief Justice agreed with you entirely because, in his opinion, the parts of it I was able to get to, he did say, we have to construe the word tax somewhat liberally.
Yeah. Well, I didn't hear totally, you know, I didn't hear the
Well,
part
don't
where,
call until you read 139 pages.
But I was wondering, you know, why is there such a brouhaha over individuals having to have health care? In New York State, if you drive a car, you have to have auto insurance.
You bet. Okay, Maxine, you've had your turn.
Great.
The reason
Bye.
You've had your turn is because there are five other people behind you. Thanks
right.
a lot.
Bye.
Appreciate
Thank you.
It. Yeah.
Very
okay.
good. Very good.
Let's go to Mary in Poughkeepsie. Mary in Poughkeepsie, you're on.
Hi, I'll try to make it quick. I'm a retired attorney, so I don't want to talk attorney stuff. You guys are doing a great job. But I want to make a notation for the record that after the euphoria wears off, we've got to look at the big bad devil out there, which is the word tax. Because the GOP are going to use that to put out the big lie that this is all taxation in a different disguise.
Sure.
And my feeling is that we've got to get some kind of an informational system. The Democrats are not great at this, but we've got to put something out to fight that big lie.
Okay, stop
that's
right
my,
there.
That's my comment.
Let's stop right there. Let's ask the professor. Professor, I want to ask you this. Did Obama do a good job of explaining it today?
I thought he was great today. Of course, I always like Obama. You know, I mean, look, let me be perfectly candid. I like Obama. I like him a lot. I like somebody who's smart in the White House, whether I agree with him on everything
or not.
Well,
you didn't think Bush was smart?
Well, I certainly don't think he's of the caliber of somebody like Obama or Clinton before him. Or if you go back, he certainly is not the caliber of somebody like Nixon or somebody like Papa Bush.
Yeah.
Nothing like that.
Yeah.
So I like somebody that's smart in the White House. And I like somebody that's really interested in civil rights, civil liberties, doing things that obviously the country is going to do in the future. You know, gay rights, universal health care. Come on. All the industrial, civilized, enlightened countries of the world are doing this or they're moving in that direction. So I like Obama. I thought he was terrific today. I thought he explained it very well.
Yeah, Mary, I thought, you know, to me, the big mistake in the beginning, and we can argue this till the cows come home, was not doing universal health care.
Yes, agree.
And Medicare for all.
Oh, I think he's brilliant. I think he did the right thing right from the get-go. But I think that from here on in, we're going to have a real...
Yeah.
You know, push and pull all the way, like Taffy, all the way down to the election, because the Republicans aren't going to stand for it.
You are
and
so.
The tax word is the big bully man.
But that's a double-edged sword, and I'll tell you why. Because as soon as the Republicans start saying this is a tax, what happens with what Romney did in Massachusetts? All of a sudden, he raised the tax in Massachusetts by having the individual mandate there as well.
Can you just envision what that debate is going to look like?
Get that out there to the people. The people are so dumbed down.
Mary, we appreciate your call. You're terrific.
Okay,
thank you.
Take care.
Yeah,
bye.
Okay, we'll go to Joy in Montgomery. Joy.
Hello.
Hey.
I have a book. I'm a nurse for 34 years, and I've worked mostly emergency rooms, so I am ecstatic. Also, I have nurse friends in Massachusetts, and MassCare is working. The only thing they can't do is bring down the costs. But the doctors own the CAT scans and the laboratories and all these unnecessary services that are overused. However, I'm calling because I got a book called Healthcare Reform, What It Is, Why It's Necessary, and How It Works by Jonathan Gruber, G-R-U-B-E-R. And it makes it understandable in a really simple way that anybody can figure out what this is trying to do.
Well, it has to be very simple.
It is. It's actually a cartoon book, which I found annoying, but it is very, very simple. It's 140 pages. I don't plug books, but people ask me all the time about it, and you can tell where people stand, because if they say Obamacare, they don't know anything about it, and if they say Affordable Care Act or ACOs, they have done it.
I don't know. I mean, you know where I stand, and yet people use Obamacare all the time. I think the big mistake, frankly, was ignoring saying Obamacare was a bad word, because I happen to think it is Obamacare.
I like it.
And I have no problem with it.
I like it.
Yeah.
Right.
Hey,
I like it.
Hey, Joy, gotta go.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Madeline in Beckett. Boy, we're getting a lot of calls from Beckett, you know.
Yeah, I am.
You know, Jacob's Pillow is up there, and they all dance up there. You can't go to Beckett without dancing. Go ahead. Go ahead,
I'm commenting on Mitt Romney's comments right after the Supreme Court decision on the affordable health care. And Romney said it's bad law, and one of the first statements he made that people would lose their current health insurance.
He did
this
say that.
This is patently untrue.
No, it's a lie.
Right. And the second statement he made later on, that businesses would be hurt. And I don't agree with that, because businesses under the Affordable Health Care Act are not mandated to supply health insurance, or would be penalized if they don't. It's the individuals that are. So again, he is patently misstating the issues.
Well, you know, when the president got up there and...
That's the first thing he did.
He
pointed
said,
out that
he
people
said,
would
he didn't
not
say,
lose their current
right.
insurance,
he didn't
which
say
is
my,
correct.
He didn't say my opponent is a liar. He just
no,
said...
No, he didn't say that, yeah. But I sure want to say that. If Romney misstates the issues, if he does so intentionally, he's a liar. And if he does so unintentionally, he's a stupid dope.
Well... During the debates, when Romney repeats some of that, I think Obama will absolutely destroy him, because I think Obama had it down today in about 5 minutes. I mean, he made very specific, in language that absolutely everybody could understand, why some of the provisions of Obamacare are absolutely wonderful and they will be very, very popular.
Madeline, we have to take a break. I'm so sorry.
I agree with that. I think Obama did a wonderful job explaining it very quickly and very simply in terms that everybody can understand.
Okay, bye. Madeline, thank you for the wonderful call. Appreciate it.
Okay, yeah. Bye.
Okay. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support for Vox Pop comes from Hanford Mills Museum, East Meredith, New York, presenting demonstrations, workshops, and hands-on history activities. Open Wednesdays through Sundays, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. HanfordMills.org. Robert E. Danz, DDS, Hudson, New York, offering dental services including mercury-free tooth-colored fillings, implants, and crowns. DRDANZ.com. Sanitol, Hudson Valley Green Cleaners, steam vapor sanitizing, helping to reduce the risk of asthma and allergies, indoor air quality testing, and environmentally friendly mold removal. Sanitol.com. Eagle Hill School, Hardwick, Massachusetts, a college prep boarding and day school for students in grades 8 through 12 with learning disabilities, dyslexia, ADD, and ADHD. EHS1.org. And the Linda, presenting The Scars on 45, Friday, July 6th at 8 p.m., co-sponsored by WEXT 97.7, thelinda.org.
Well, we're back, and we are delighted to have Albany Law Professor Vince Bonventri with us. He's done a lot, former clerk for two justices of the New York State Court of Appeals, also held a very prestigious U.S. Supreme Court Judicial Fellowship before joining the Albany Law School in 1990. We're very lucky to have him here. And frankly, this is the first time I've worked with him, and I'm going to be working with him a lot more if he'll come on.
You actually forget. I was on your show years and years and years ago.
I don't even remember my kids' names.
Yeah.
What do you mean I forget? I met you 20 years ago and the thing. I said, what? Okay, let's go to Bobby in Kingston. All right, Bobby, you're on. Go, Bobby.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to point out that buried inside the New York Times in the last couple of weeks was an article stating all the different professors, not all, but a half a dozen of different distinguished law professors saying that the mandate was constitutional and there was no way that anyone could... deny that in a court of law. And I thought that got so little play.
Well, at the outset, overwhelmingly, the constitutional law professors said that this was valid.
Yes.
What did happen, however, though, after oral arguments, many of them, and I think maybe most of them, changed their mind. I think they changed their mind because it looked as though the court was so hostile during the oral arguments. I have to say, I never changed my mind. I stuck to my guns, and I always said, I think that Roberts is the one who's going to make a difference. Believe me, that was just a guess, but it turned out to be a pretty good guess. Now, constitutionally, really, this is an easy case. The only thing that made it difficult is the fact that there are four justices on the court who vote like partisan Republican politicians. I'm not excusing the liberals because I think they do the same thing. They vote like...
Except they vote the way
I like them to vote. And, you know, with regard to Obamacare, it worked out the right way. So the case was easy for them.
But I have to tell you, Vince, I think that anybody who's listening now knows why this New York Times documented it this morning. There's some very old people and not so well people on that court. And, you know, you get a Republican president for 8 years, you'll have nine justices like that.
That's right.
Alan, that's too scary.
Well, it may be too scary, but you better.
But
you
it
know,
could be.
No,
that's right.
I mean, no, I really think our democracy is in. I'm almost 80. I think democracy is in terrible danger. I'm glad about today's decision, certainly. But the amount, the unbelievable amount of money that was spent in Wisconsin, for example.
Sure, right.
It's very scary. And
you ain't seen nothing yet compared to what's going to happen in this election.
I'm sure that's going to be the case.
Hey, Bobby, thank you for the call. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you for taking it.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
What? Did I do the right thing? Yeah, I think I did. Let's go to Les in Delmar. Les, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for the call. After the Supreme Court decision, Romney aggressively and with hostility said he's going to repeal it in the House of Representatives. I doubt if he can do that, but the bottom line...
Oh, I think it was not only Romney, but it was Boehner, the Speaker, and Cantor, who's... the real, warrior on this, right. Said they were going to repeal it. Sure.
My question basically is there a similar historical law events there? They got in such hostility between the parties, the Republicans and the Democrats, and what was the consequences for their for elections or for policy?
I'm trying to think.
Me too.
Right off the bat, if I could think of anything like that. You know, certainly with regard to Supreme Court decisions, we've had decisions where, you know, a good deal of the country was very upset. I mean, look at Brown versus Board of Education, for crying out loud.
Yes.
Eisenhower had to send down the troops. Kennedy had to send down the troops. And even thereafter, for many years, it was very, very difficult, you know, to get a black kid to be able to go to a public school or university in some places in the South and in the Bible Belt. Yeah, that's always funny that it's the Bible Belt that's so opposed to the racial integration. But, yeah, I mean, so oftentimes a Supreme Court decision, you know, is rendered, but that doesn't mean that the rest of the country then goes to sleep and says, well, I guess they were right and that's the end of it. Well, no, there's oftentimes battles thereafter.
Well, in Citizens United, Les, a lot of people of my particular philosophical bent said, impeach him, change, impeach him, amend the Constitution. And I keep writing back to them, said, that ain't going to happen.
I hate to tell you, Alan, I thought they did the right thing at Citizens United. I don't like the government telling us we can't spend our money to put up political commercials. Yeah. I like the political commercials. In fact, it's because of the political commercials that the rest of the American people knew how bad Newt Gingrich is.
So do you like the Koch brothers?
Yeah.
No, I don't like the Koch brothers.
I mean, the problem is, if we're talking about I'm sorry for the dissent here, Les, but, I want to just address this because it seems to me that, you know, we had the protesters out there, the 1%ers, the 99%ers. If the 1%ers have most of the money as in the end of the Monopoly game, and you say to them, you can spend anything you want, you haven't got a democracy anymore. That's the difference between what you just said and what I think.
Yeah, what do you think in terms of the Civil War probably ranks number 10 in terms of the highest problems we ever had with a decision made by the United States government? Is this kind of a 1 or 2 or a 5 or a 6? What's your projection?
One, okay. At best. I just don't think it's going to be much of a problem, this decision.
Good to hear.
Yeah. Hey, Les, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's go to Bob in Cambridge. Okay, Bob in Cambridge, you're on.
Yeah, hi, Alan. Thanks for taking the call. As Colombo used to say, excuse me, I'm confused. I'm really trying to follow the money in this whole thing. You know, I would have thought that Republicans really wanted the insurance companies to make lots and lots of money.
They do.
They're making enough money. So why are they so against this Obamacare, as it's called?
Because they don't like Obama. They want Obama out of there.
That's the only reason.
Yeah, well, that's the reason.
That's like cutting off your nose to spite your face. I mean, they're willing to do that.
They'll find other ways.
They were the ones that promoted this from the start. These were their think tanks that came up with
this. You had Mitch McConnell stand up there and said, my number one job is to make sure this guy loses. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, well, there's a real agenda there. But in the meantime, I have trouble following the money on this. Because I think money is behind all of this.
Well, you'll never be able to follow all of the money all of the time because, believe me, it takes very circuitous routes. But in this case, they want Obama out of there.
Yeah, and there isn't any indication that Obama wanted his Obamacare to help the insurance companies make money. So,
I would hope not too. But it just doesn't make any sense. You know, so many of these things so plain as the nose on your face. But this one just had me vexed.
Just makes sense politically.
Makes sense politically, as Vince says.
Yeah.
Okay, hey, Bob, thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Yeah, let's go to Andrew in Walton, up on Walton's Mountain. Okay, Andrew.
Good afternoon, lads. I just wanted to mention a quickie. You guys had said that the 193 pages is a put-off. I disagree. People can look at that. The first 20 pages or so is Roberts explaining his rationale, and it's very clear what he's trying to do there. He's saying, look, if it looks like a duck and quacks and lays eggs that little duckies come out of, it's a duck. You can call it a mandate or a womandate or whatever. It's still a tax. So it looks as if the Democrats have snookered the Republicans here by saying again and again it's not a tax, and all of a sudden here comes the Chief Justice saying it is a tax. So it's very interesting reading, and people shouldn't be put off by the 193 pages because you can leaf through it. It's on the New York Times website. Very interesting reading.
Well, congratulations to you for having waded through the 44 pages. And you are right. Roberts is brilliant. He writes, or his clerks write, brilliantly. They know how to make things clear. But I can't imagine that too many Americans are actually going to read the whole thing. I don't think they're going to read 44 pages.
The first couple 20 pages, just see where the guy's going and say, okay, this is something that I, as an American, can understand.
Okay, Andrew.
Can I switch quick to a basic capitalism here?
Yeah.
The Adam Smith 101, the widget makers, if you're working for a widget maker and you don't like what he's doing, you move to another widget makers across town. You couldn't do that without health care. Now a guy who might be in New Mexico wants to move to Vermont can do that because he can pick up the transferable aspect of his health care and move it with him. I think that really changes how this country works.
A very good point, Andrew. Thank you for that. Appreciate
it.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to Chris in Chatham. Okay, Chris, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I happen to agree with you both that the justices tend to reach a result and then come up with their decision. So I wonder, and I think you talked about this a little bit, to what extent Roberts' decision is a power play, a political move in the small p sense, for him to seize the court and to make the court his, and to even put himself in the history books and the textbooks.
Well, I think we've addressed this a little bit. Vince, I know you've been pretty clear on this, that he wants to make the court his.
Yes.
And he's concerned about his historical perspective.
Absolutely.
And even to steal the thunder back from Kennedy, make sure that it's not Kennedy's court?
Oh, I don't think it's ever been really Kennedy's court. And by the way, from the very first moment he opened his mouth at the hearings, you had an idea that Kennedy, who is basically a libertarian, had no stomach for any of this stuff. But I think Roberts was worried about the reputation of the court.
His reputation, though, as chief. I mean, this puts him in control of the court. He's not simply going to vote with the conservatives all the time. That's going to be the reputation among the American people.
So the question is it politics or is it jurisprudence?
Well, you know...
Going forward, when people talk about what is the court going to do, now they're going to say, Roberts, Roberts is not going to just be a hardline rightist. We need to know what Roberts is going to do.
Well, I take a different view. My view is, yes, he will be a hardline rightist.
Well, of course he will. But, you know, the American people who don't trust the Supreme Court that much anymore, they will remember this. They're not going to look look at the 70 cases that they decide every
without
year.
Question, he threw a really good knuckleball.
You know what? At the early Republic, Chief Justice Marsh and Al and I were talking about this in Marbury versus Madison, one of the most famous cases where the Supreme Court came up with judicial review for itself. Okay. John Marshall spent most of his opinion absolutely lambasting Thomas Jefferson and the Jeffersons. But then at the end, he pulled an Alfred Hitchcock, and all of a sudden he said, yeah, but you're right. And, you know, he ruled in favor of the Jeffersonians. So he got in what he wanted to, but then he acted like a real neutral jurisprude, a jurist. And that's what Roberts did here.
You know, I'm going to invite you back because we're going to have a whole show just on Marbury versus Madison. There's a lot to be said. Okay, Chris, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's go to Ron in Ron in Canterbury.
Shaftesbury.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Shaftesbury. I just had a couple of thoughts. One of the thoughts that I had is Obamacare up to this point pretty much has been a pejorative term. But it's completely flipped among probably flipped voters too. And now Obamacare is actually, hey, here's the right thing instead of this crummy piece of junk.
And it's got the good housekeeping seal of approval on it.
Yeah, I know. And so Obamacare is now a positive term rather than a pejorative term. And also another really nice thing that happened to this is the Democrats just appeared wimpy and powerless. They couldn't get anything, even though it was the Republicans blocking it. And here they've got an incredible major victory, and Democrats have gone from wimpy to right. And I think it's going to elect Obama.
And the victory for Obama was by Chief Justice Roberts, who he voted against.
Exactly, and who voted against, Bush v. Gore. You know,
Well, I think Roberts.
That's great, and I think the Supreme Court saved themselves. They're.
Well, he did. I don't know about the rest of us.
He did.
Right? Yeah, he did. He was in a position to see the history of it, probably more than the others, because he's in a way responsible for it all, in a larger...
It's the Roberts Court.
Yeah. Hey, Ron, you got to go now.
Yep, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and on to Bridget in Salem. Okay, Bridget, you're on.
Hi, Alan.
Hey.
I'm actually a first-time caller, but I listen all the time.
We're delighted.
Two points. One is, I mourn January 10th as the death of democracy in this country, the end of a noble experiment, because the money rules. And they find a way to use the money to defeat Obama, and they will repeal the Health Care Act.
If they can. Yep. Right now.
If they defeat Obama and get the Congress, it will be repealed.
Yeah, that's right.
And that'll leave us where?
Well, you're assuming it's going to happen. Right now, Obama...
Well, I'm very... pessimistic.
Well, sure, me too.
Money rules.
Well, me too. On the other hand, yes, I think you're right. Once they had Citizens United, they had the money. They could do what they.
There are liberals with money too. Come on.
Yeah, but not the way. Not that 1%. Yeah. Bridget. In all of the major contested states right now, Obama is winning.
Seems to be winning.
He's ahead. So don't be too pessimistic. Don't
well,
join
thank
me.
Thank you for the encouragement. Meanwhile, I'm going to be ringing doorbells and putting up lawn signs and making phone calls for the Democratic Committee of Salem, New York.
Bridget, thank you. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
And thank you for what you do.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Let's go to, we've heard from him before, James Monroe. Does that strike a bell to you, James Monroe?
He was one of the Jeffersonians.
Yeah, go ahead.
I wish. I was just bringing up a point that I remember hearing the Republicans always saying how, we're heading to socialist government. We got to protect our freedoms.
Yes.
It's like they're trying to take our freedoms away. They want to return back to the old days where you got no choice. Your choice is to do it or die.
James, we thank you for your insight. Appreciate it.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
We're turning it to socialists, and they may take our Social Security away.
Okay. Very, very quickly, John in New York City. John, you got to make a statement because we're out of time. Go ahead.
Yes. Great show, Alan. For you, Professor Bonventry, were you surprised that Justice Kennedy was not the deciding vote? And is this Justice Roberts' finest hour?
I think it's his finest hour. Well, I think it's his reputation's finest hour. If this is the great lawyer John that I know in New York City. Yes, I think Kennedy could have gone either way. I think Roberts, this is his shining moment, and I think he intended it to be that way.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a
lot.
Good
to hear from you, John.
Okay. And I'm so sorry. I want to apologize to Mike in Shushan, who wanted to talk about the Commerce Clause, but we just haven't got the time to do it. We are out of time. Thanks to Professor Bonventre for joining us today. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Storm King Art Center, a 500-acre sculptor park in Cornwall, New York, presenting Silhouettes, a family program with artist Browning Kay, Sunday, July 8th at 1 p.m., stormking.org. And the Theater Bond, New Lebanon, New York, presenting The 39 Steps, starting June 29th, running through July 8th. Professional theater in the country, theaterbarn.com, and Current Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York, providing legal and consulting services to life insurers in a changing regulatory climate, currentcompliance.com, and the Brattleboro, Vermont, offering visitors opportunities to experience the arts in galleries, musical venues, and theaters throughout Greater Brattleboro, BrattleboroChamber.org. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Melissa Wednesday Bunning. Our producer is Patrick Dondras. I'm Alan Shartok. Moyers and Company on Company tomorrow. Next week on Medical Monday, the Breen Center's Dr. Jennifer Michaels on mental health and addiction issues. Stay tuned now for a news update. And Professor Bonventry, thank you so much from the Albany Law School for being with us.
It was such a treat to be with you, Alan.
I remember you now.